Okay, we're calling the March meeting of the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind to order. Thank you all for coming today. We have a good turnout, and we'll start off with introductions. Can we get a runner for one of these mics? Don's going to start it off. Okay, I'll start. Yeah, go ahead and take the mic, though, Don. Okay. I'm Rob Turner, president from Sunnyvale.
Is this Mike? Turn this level up just a little bit if you can. I'm John Glass, vice president from Saratoga.
It's right here.
Oh, right here. Susan Hyatt. Is
that on? Yeah, it's on. Okay. Is it loud enough in the audience?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, this is Susan Hyatt, San Jose Recording Secretary.
Okay. Here you go.
This is Mike Keithley from Mountain View.
Here you go.
I'm Diane Harms from San Jose.
I'm Lynette Kersey from San Jose.
I'm Susan Glass from Saratoga.
I'm Bev Clifford, Goodies Chair from San Jose, and I would like to thank Susan for her wonderful goodies today.
Hi, thank you. Good morning, it's Alice McGrath from Sunnyvale.
This is Michelle McGrew from Mountain View and fundraising chair.
Good morning, Ken Hoke, San Jose.
Good morning, Elmer Chaps in Los Gatos, and I want to thank the club for sending me that lovely card. And I'm almost back to my old repulsive self after they took that big hunk out of me. It was about the size of an orange.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Kathy Hogue from San Jose.
We've been sick. Glad you're feeling better.
Yeah.
There you go.
Hello, this is Roger Peterson. Hello, am I here? Yeah. This is Roger Peterson, program chair from Mountain View and second vice president of the California Council of the Blind. And I want to particularly welcome Elmer and ask him if hernias are an occupational hazard for rehab counselors.
Okay, this is Don Wilcox from Palo Alto Hospitality. I want to thank Sharon for sending around the microphone. And last month we had three students. This month we have zero students.
Hi, this is Donna, and I'm the lunch orders, and I just had surgery myself. I had a small, slight knee surgery, torn meniscus, and it was a week ago yesterday.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay. David Hunter, Redwood City.
Alan Jones from Santa Clara.
Excuse me.
Diane Griffith. I don't feel like a visitor anymore since I paid my dues, so... And I want to extend a warm thank you to Don Cox, who came last month and spoke to my San Mateo group. Thanks.
Okay. Cam Acker, Mountain View Transportation Chairman.
Excuse me. Good morning. Abdakin Ahmad from Campbell.
I'm Carolyn Dingman from San Jose and also from Vista Center for the Blind.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Ruben Armenta and Roxy from Santa Clara.
I'm Dean. I'm San Jose. I'm also on the San Jose City Disability Commission.
Hi there. You got Charlie Stein, otherwise known as the Crusher from Palo Alto.
Charlie Campstein. Woo!
Okay.
Watch it.
Lupi Medrano, San Jose.
Here you go.
Vina Bradley, San Jose.
Caroline Owens, San Jose.
Good morning, everyone. This is John Kanzi here, and I live at Monta Vista Terrace, and I'm welcoming everybody to the March, the March 2013 meeting of the Silicon Valley Council of the Blind.
Oh, Naomi Grove, San Jose, coffee maker sometimes.
Okay,
where's your husband?
No, we can just...
Okay.
I don't know where
Stephen is. Sharon Tay, volunteer. Glad to be back.
Let's just leave it here until we come up with something else. Yeah, that's it for now. Steve's missing, but...
Okay.
And Victor.
Oh, yes. Steve and Victor. Not sure. Well, we'll get them later. So, good crowd. Thanks, everybody, for coming again. And it's my pleasure now to turn the microphone over to Susan Glass, and we'll do our award presentation for the Barbara Rhodes grant.
Okay, Susan.
All right, what an exciting day this is. I'm thrilled that we have this kind of a turnout for this award. This is the third year that the Barbara Rhodes Adaptive Technology Grant has existed, although it's our second time that we've been able to issue awards. And we must thank Roger Peterson for coming up with the name for this grant. Barbara Rhodes is a beloved member, and we're really happy that we can honor her in this way. This year we have two recipients, and I would first like to present to you Ms. Lynette Kersey. Lynette Kersey teaches Braille classes at the Santa Clara Valley Lions Blind Center, and she also teaches Braille to English as Second Language students, and she works for the Braille Project. Ms. Kersey requested two things that will help her in her career aspirations and her wonderful human service to others. First, she asked for an extension of a year-long maintenance agreement for her Braille Apex note taker. And secondly, she asked for a language master dictionary to be used when she is teaching Braille to ESL students. So we have purchased the maintenance agreement, but it's just paper. But we do have, and what I mean by that is it's not a physical entity I can hand to her, but it's been done. But we would like at this moment to present her with her language master. And congratulations, Lynette. We are absolutely thrilled to be presenting you with this award. And I will hand you your language master at this time, as well as the mic.
Oh, yes, and those anagrams will be a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. This is awesome. I can't wait to check this unit out, and as soon as I get a new ESL student, I get to use it. So thank you so, so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, everyone wants to see it here. We're going to jump it up and down here. By the way, we hope both our awardees will consider joining us as members. We can certainly use your expertise and human contributions, and I know you'll add a lot to our vitality, and we hope we can add to yours as well. So our next recipient is Mr. Ahmed. Mr. Ahmed has his own nonprofit organization. It's called the East African Visual Impairment Community. And what he does is he tries to educate people about visual impairments in East Africa, as well as try to help East Africans with visual impairments to obtain resources that they need, whether it's equipment or books or literacy materials and so on. Mr. Ahmed requested the purchase of an iPhone, which would not only aid him in his personal independence, but help him continue the work with his nonprofit organization. And so it is with great pleasure that we present Mr. Ahmed with his iPhone. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody. I can't say too much. It's overwhelming. Thanks. Thanks, Mr. President, Rob Turner, Vice President John Glass, a man who dedicated this idea and belong, Roger Peterson, and the committee of the Barbara Technology Adapt members, Mike Keithley, Susan Glass, Beth Clifford, and Leon Kanasawa. Also, thanks to Secretary Treasurer Victor Clifford and Secretary of Correspondence Susan Hayat, and all members of the Silicon Valley Council of Blind. I can't say anymore. It's so overwhelming for me. I'm very humble to collect this gift from you, and all I can say, all I ever remember is, when, if I ever say anything, I remember one of the American pioneer scientific who is the father of science, rocket science, and Robert Hutchinson once said, it's often true that the dream of yesterday is the hope of today. And the hope of today is the reality of tomorrow. Yes. What you offer for me is something I was dreamed. And you tell me it's true, and I will keep doing it. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Well, thank you, Susan, for that and everybody for the presentation. I think some great work will end up being done as a result of this. So now we'll move on to our next agenda item, which is our ham radio presentation. And to get that started, I'm going to hand it over to John Glass, and we'll take it from there.
Okay, whoops, there we go. Oh, well, thank you, Rob. And this presentation is going to be a little different from presentations that we typically have here at SVCB in that Rob and I are going to kind of do it jointly. We're both ham radio operators, and actually there are two other hams in the room that I know of. Mike Keithley is one, and Don Wilcox is the other. And I don't think John McNulty is here today, is he?
No.
No. Okay. So we may call on Mike and Don here in a minute to in a little while just to say a few words about how they got involved with ham radio. But to start things off, what I want to do is tell you a little bit about what ham radio is. And actually, the official name is amateur radio. This is a communication service that you can get involved with. It requires getting a license from the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. And this is a communication service that is a personal service. And what that means is that you can't use it for business, but you can use it for personal communications, such as talking with people around town or all over the world, for that matter. And the real purpose of amateur radio is really twofold. Number one, it's to help provide emergency communications in a time of need, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. The other purpose for amateur radio's existence is experimentation with technology, and there are a lot of ham radio operators who have contributed significantly to many Silicon Valley high-tech companies, and there are many inventions that became products and became mainstays in the world of electronics as we know it today that were originated by experimentation that was done by ham radio operators. And so, you know, that that really, really says a lot for, you know, for what it's been able to do. Now, all of you, of course, have heard of CB radio. You know what that is. And you probably also know what this new service called the Family Radio Service, or FRS, is. This is where you can go down and buy a couple of handheld radios for about, whoops, Mike, if you can press the off button on that radio, please. That was a radio that Mike had on that was telling us that he hadn't pressed a button for half an hour. But we're going to use that in a demonstration here in just a little bit. What I was saying about the Family Radio Service is any citizen can go down to Radio Shack or Best Buy or Fry's or any electronics store, and for about $50 you can buy two handheld radios, otherwise known as walkie-talkies. These don't require any license. You can use them for talking to your family and friends. You get about, maybe half a mile of range out of them if you're lucky. And it's a similar situation with CB or Citizens Band. All of you remember it from the 1970s and all the CB songs like C.W. McCall's Convoy and many others. And CB also doesn't require a license. You can go buy a radio and you can talk to people. The problem with these two services is that the range is very limited, and with CB, the channels are so crowded with activity that it's really hard to carry on useful communications unless the person is in real close proximity to you. Ham radio, because it requires an FCC license, is much more organized. And when you have communication on ham radio, there typically isn't, you know, interference from other stations. You can communicate either locally or around the world, either directly on some of the shortwave bands or through satellites. And also internet has become a large part of amateur radio in connecting stations together so that you can take a handheld radio that operates on the VHF and UHF frequency bands, which are bands that are intended and work for local communication. You can communicate to a repeater station that is on a nearby tall building or mountaintop. And from that repeater station, you can go out on the internet and connect with other hams all over the world. That's right. That's right. And so you know, it's really evolved. The internet has evolved into a connection facility for ham radio to really allow a lot more communication to take place. Go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say too, one of the interesting things about the internet is that there's also something called remote base stations, and what this means is that you can actually operate a remote base station from your computer at home. So, for example, and we'll get into this a little more, but one of the organizations that works with individuals with disabilities called Handy Ham, they have a couple of remote base stations in Minnesota, and we can actually operate them from our computers and have contacts on shortwave through that particular station. So that's another aspect that the internet has made available.
And one of the real benefits of that is that in order for communication to take place on the shortwave bands, you have to have an antenna that, there are many different types of antennas, but the size of the antenna is much larger that you use on the shortwave bands than it is of the antenna that you would use on the VHF and UHF local bands. And as you know, many people these days live in apartments and condominiums and housing developments where it isn't possible to put up outdoor antennas. And so having the ability to use these remotely controllable stations from your computer is really nice, because you can sit at home and put on a headset with an earpiece and a microphone, and using software on the computer, actually control the shortwave station. You can set the frequency and the power level and decide what part of the world you want to talk to based on the band that you select to talk on, and that allows you to have a ham radio station at your fingertips that has nice big antennas that allow you to have this worldwide communication. Now, the benefits for a blind or visually impaired person are many. One of them is you have the ability to make friends all over the world from your own home. And when you're talking to people, you don't have to let them know that you have a disability if you don't want to. And so this really puts us on an equal playing field with everybody that we talk to, from the standpoint that, as far as they're concerned, they're talking to someone in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they don't have to know, that we're any different in any way from them. And that's really kind of nice. You also have a lot of local radio clubs. Here in Silicon Valley, there are at least 20. Most of these clubs have a meeting once a month where people get together in person for camaraderie, and they usually have a guest speaker that talks about an interesting topic, usually related to ham radio, but sometimes not. Sometimes they'll branch out and it'll be a topic about some scientific experiment that somebody's doing here in the valley, or maybe it'll be a topic on the new hybrid cars that Tesla just released, for example. That was a topic at one of the local ham radio clubs. And because there were so many people in attendance who have an interest in technology, and many of these people have a technology background, Tesla sent an engineer to talk to this group, because they knew they were going to get all kinds of questions about battery capacity and charging at different voltages, and if I had 220 in my house versus 110, how much more quickly would it charge up the batteries, and those kinds of questions. So they sent an engineer, and that was really neat. Another thing that ham radio operators do, we talked about emergency communications, or I mentioned it briefly, and one of the things that hams do in preparation for emergency communications is they will volunteer their services to help provide communications at public service events, like the March of Dimes walkathons. Sometimes they'll help out with the Red Cross with activities that they, training classes and that sort of thing. And where ham radio really shines is when a real emergency happens, such as the 1989 earthquake here, the Loma Prieta earthquake we had. Hams were busy around the clock passing messages, health and welfare messages, to friends and loved ones around the state, as well as, all over the country. Because as many of you may remember, when we had the 1989 earthquake, a lot of people's telephones went dead. And it was because there were so many people trying to use the telephone system at the same time that it just wasn't possible to get communications through sometimes. I remember the night of the earthquake, picking up my telephone and actually waiting 20 minutes before it gave me a dial tone. And the reason I was trying to use my phone is I was talking with a ham radio operator on the radio from Southern California, and he wanted to check to find out how his grandmother in San Jose was. He wanted to make sure she was okay. And he was not able to get a telephone connection to work from Southern California up here. So I, as a local person, was trying to get through, and I finally did. But like I said, it took me 20 minutes to get a dial tone. And so he and I just chatted while I held the phone to my ear waiting for that dial tone to come. So that was interesting.
Well, it's easy to take our communications infrastructure for granted because it's here every day. But if you have a severe emergency where, because like John said, the amateur radio operators, they've got emergency equipment. They've got generators ready. They've got batteries. Maybe they've got their automobiles. That's what they practice for. So when the power goes out, they've always got these. At least short wave is available, and hopefully some of the repeaters and so forth. Well, even they've got emergency power, so they're usually stay up and running.
Yeah, that's true. And even if you don't have repeater stations, with the handheld radios that we have up here, and we're gonna be able to pass one around in a minute, so you can see what they're like. We can talk radio to radio several miles directly without having to use a repeater station. And so if all power is out and the mountaintop repeater stations have been destroyed, maybe due to a large earthquake, we can still communicate radio to radio over a several mile distance with just the handhelds that we have here. So two things that you might be wondering are, number one, you said that a license is required. How difficult is that, and how would I get one if I wanted it? And the second question that you probably have is, so how much does all of this cost? So first of all, to get a license, there are three different classes of license in the amateur radio service now. And the first or entry-level license is called the technician. The technician license consists of... let me think. What is it now, Mike? Is it 50 questions? 50 multiple choice questions that have to do with amateur radio rules and regulations, operating procedures, and there is some technical material on the test having to do with electronics theory, which is not too difficult to learn. There are plenty of study materials available. The organization that Rob mentioned a moment ago called Handy Hams, which is based in Minnesota, is a nonprofit organization that helps people with disabilities obtain their amateur radio licenses. And the way that they help is they provide study materials in accessible format. They have all of the study questions available on their website that you can download in text format. They also have them recorded so that if you prefer to study by listening to audio, they will send them to you, I believe, on CD now. And they also hold a yearly ham radio camp in Minnesota that people are welcome to attend. It's a week of ham radio. You study for your license. You get to operate radios with assistants helping you. And you get to learn all about the world of amateur radio in this week-long camp. It's really fun. Rob and I have both attended them. And Rob, do you want to say anything more about how the camps work?
They used to have one here in California, but they don't offer that anymore. It's strictly the one in Minneapolis, and it's a heck of a lot of fun. I went to the camp at that time in Malibu. And it was great. Got to meet some nice people at the time. Well, the other nice thing about the camps is they actually set up the exam so that you can take your exam right there. And so the the cap really deals with you can either study for the exam and get help with that, whichever license you're trying to take. They have stations set up where you can actually have a chance to listen and experience, you know, what amateur radio is all about. They've got operating procedure classes where they go over different aspects of how to operate appropriate things to do. So anyway, hopefully there's plenty of resources to get started.
There are plenty of. Say that again. Yeah, the camp is actually held during the summer. This year it's in Minnesota. It's the last week in July, and I think it spills over into the first week of August. For anybody who's interested in this organization, you can find out all of their information on the web. They have a real nice accessible website, and it's Handyham. That's HANDIHAM. .org. Handyham.org is their website. And of course, if you don't remember that and you want to get some information, you can call Rob or me, and we'll be glad to give that to you. One of the things that, you know, we were talking about operating radio stations, and one of the things that's kind of fun is there is an annual event that ham radio operators take part in called Field Day. Field Day is the last, or actually it's the fourth full weekend in June, and radio clubs and individuals get together and set up portable ham radio stations in local parks, on mountains, in campgrounds, on college campuses, anywhere that they can find a place to set up their equipment. And the objective is to contact as many other ham radio stations in the United States and Canada as you can over a 24-hour period. Now, the real purpose of this is to help people set up portable stations. Now, when you set these stations up out in the field, most of the time what people do is they either bring along a generator for power, a gasoline generator, or some people operate their stations off of batteries, and they will charge the batteries with solar panels. And the idea is to be prepared for emergencies so that if a real emergency occurred and you had to go set up a portable station, you'd have experience with doing it. The other thing that it does is it gives people an opportunity to get on the radio and make contact with other groups that are doing the same thing in a way where, you know, newcomers have a chance to see what it's all about. And that's why a lot of these groups will set up in a public place like a park so that the general public can experience the benefits of ham radio firsthand. There are so many activities that you can participate in ham radio. There are contests that you can operate where you try to contact as many stations as you can, either in a particular state or in a particular country. There are
like the Worked All States Award.
That's right. There are awards that you can apply for, and there's a Worked All States Award, which means that you've made a contact with another ham radio station in each of the 50 states.
And you can refine that even further. You could have a Worked All States on a given band.
That's right. You can there is another award which you can apply for, which is called DXCC, DX Century Club, and this means that you've talked to 100 countries. And there are about 330, I believe the last number that I've heard, there are approximately 330 countries that are considered eligible for this award. So if somebody's real ambitious, it's possible for them to talk to 100 countries in, maybe 6 months to a year, you know, depending on how active they are on the radio and depending on what the band conditions are like. And some people spend a lifetime, trying to get this award. Many of you have heard of course, and are familiar with the International Space Station. Well, the International Space Station has a ham radio station on it. And many of the astronauts who have spent time on the ISS, as they call it for short, are ham radio operators. And they sometimes will spend their spare time making contacts with ham radio operators around the world from the International Space Station. And one of the things that they do specifically with that radio station is they set up schedules to make contacts with schools around the country. And the way that works is you will have a local ham radio operator, or a lot of times a local radio club, who will coordinate with a school, and they will set up portable equipment at the school, contact the International Space Station, and allow students to ask questions of the astronaut. And, you know, the thrill that that grade school kids especially get for being able to talk directly with an astronaut is just incredible. Another thing that a friend of ours has done fairly recently is he has been launching high-altitude balloons carrying amateur radio. And the balloon has a ham radio transmitter on it that's connected to a GPS receiver. And so it will tell people on the ground where the balloon is, what its altitude is, how fast it's traveling, and so forth. And they have had balloons that were launched here that flew completely across the Atlantic Ocean. As a matter of fact, one was picked up in Algeria. I mean, that's where it finally landed after it had been up for about 50 hours.
Wow, that's amazing.
And because of ham radio, the balloon was tracked, and people knew where it was. And it was real interesting because when it got out of range of ham radio stations on the East Coast, when it flew out over the Atlantic, after it had been, oh, I don't know, 400 or 500 miles off land, they lost communication with it, which was expected. Everybody thought, gosh, you know, this is probably the end of it. You know, we saw it get out that far, and that's probably the end of it. Well, the next morning, it turned out that some ham radio operators in the Azores had picked up its signal. And like I said, it went all the way to Algeria. So that was kind of neat. And it's because of this friend of ours who has been doing this, it actually has attracted the attention of NASA. And they have contacted him to find out if he would like to participate in some of their experiments, which is pretty neat. Let's see. One of the things that we're going to do in just a couple of minutes is we're going to attempt to actually make a ham radio contact for everybody to hear so that you can get a real firsthand listen as to what it's like. But before we do that, let's see. We have Don and we have Mike here. Do either of you want to talk for just a second about how you got involved with ham radio and what you did with it?
Yeah.
Don's is particularly interesting because of her worldwide boat trip that she's taken that many of you have heard about. Rob's turning on the microphone for Don here.
I just wanted to say that I am a ham. I'm K6SWM. Which used to stand for something else. Now it stands for sweet, let's see, S-W-M. Let's see, sweet white mouse. That's right. And then when I started this,
if she had SWF, she'd be sexy white female.
Yeah, well, I could. But when I was going to college with my ex-husband in Berkeley, he was a ham and his father was a ham. So he was K6DMW and his father was K6GID, and we actually knew the guy who was, his handle was a Golden Garbage Can. So it was, but I wanted to join that hobby. I didn't know it. So I actually, of course, I could see then, and I memorized circuits as well as the questions, and I got my general class license with 13 words a minute. And now I think that my Morse code is all mixed up with my Braille code. But I still remember da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So anyway, I got to know about that. And Chuck was stringing up 80-meter antennas between buildings and student housing. In the middle of the night, we went out and strung them up. So we had kind of fun with that. But I wanted to mention a couple other things. Later on, when we lived down here, he and some other friends, Lance Jenner, I know one of you knows him, set up a repeater station, like you were mentioning, 2 meters on the top of Mount Umanum. Was up there for many years, and I actually got to see it once, and all it was this metal cabinet, chock full of all kind of electronic stuff. And Chuck and Lance would go up there and spend the whole day as happy as clams up on top of this mountain with this stuff. And so I haven't done much hamming. I tried to do DX, distance. I never got any farther than British Columbia. Because then, all you know, we started getting into computers. And I never could do the station itself, because that was Chuck's things. He was an electrical engineer, and the station was bigger than a CPU now, and I didn't know how it worked. It sounds better now. And the last thing I want to say is I ended up having a walkie-talkie when I organized my cul-de-sac for the city, for Palo Alto, for in case of emergencies. I set it up, and they gave me a walkie-talkie. And when I decided I had to quit something, Carolyn, I had to give up something. I'm doing too much at the library. So I gave that up, and I no longer could see that there's a little screen on the walkie-talkie. And I was supposed to be the base station in case the sheriff was going to call me, you know, and I was supposed to send, I would have sent the teenagers out to see how many saber-toothed tigers we had or whatever the emergency was, you know. So I gave it to the people next door and made them be the chairman of the thing. And nowadays, they've given it to somebody else. Nobody's doing a bloody thing, but at least I do have all the emails of all those people, so I could help.
Don, when you took your boat trip around the world, amateur radio was the only communication you had, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had that, and we started out with ham radio, and we contacted people, and then people, my father-in-law was the base station here, and Chuck would call him, and we had to set up times, and that became, you wouldn't believe it, when you're out in the ocean, setting up times to fit other people's time zones is a real pain. So Gil would call, and my father-in-law would call people for us, but after about 6 months, we dropped that. So now, when my son and my daughter-in-law are going to be here next month talking about their trip, they had a whole different kind of radio communication. They had a whole net of people that they kept in contact with. We sort of got cut off, and then we had nothing but sailing for 30 days to the next island and trying to find a phone and setting up. You didn't just phone in those days, you made an appointment, you know. So it sounds like things have improved and you could actually be a ham without being an electrical engineer.
Well, you can. Yeah, Don, thank you very much.
I'll give this to Mike.
Let me just clarify, or not clarify, but let me just expand on a couple of things that Don said. It used to be that in order to get a ham radio license, you had to be able to send and receive Morse code, and that requirement has been dropped. The Morse code is no longer required for any of the ham licenses. It used to be that an entry-level license required 5 words a minute. The intermediate licenses required 13 words a minute. And if you wanted to have the top license, which is the amateur extra license, you had to be able to send and receive Morse code at 20 words a minute. And that's no longer the case. So it's just a multiple choice theory test now that you do. And it's not all, as I said before, not all electronics theory. A lot of rules and regulations and operating procedures are included on the exam today, which is really good, because most people who are getting involved with ham radio these days are getting involved with it for the communication aspect. In other words, what they're able to do with it is to make friends and provide emergency communications when needed. And so it's not as much an engineering crowd as it used to be, although, you know, there still are a number of technically oriented people who get into ham radio, but where at one time maybe it was 80%, it's probably down to 40% now. It's just a guess off the top of my head. Anyway, Mike, maybe you can tell us a little bit about when you first got into ham radio at the School for the Blind and what that was like, and then getting into ham radio again just recently.
Well, the thing for me was that between third and sixth grade, when I was going to Overbrook School for the Blind, our family lived in Thailand, and I got really interested in shortwave. I mean, shortwave was about the only way you could hear American English-speaking stations. And there was a fellow there that that I would meet, and he would take me to the some place where there's all kinds of shortwave gear around, transmitters, receivers. And, oh, well, I want this, I want that, and I want to get hold of this, and I want to get hold of this, and then my mom bought me a kit. It was just a small receiver for the AM band, but it was so cool to play around with it. You know, I memorized how to build it, so I could take it apart and build it again, and I changed this and changed that. And well, when I became a junior. When I began in middle school at Overbrook, they set up a club, and the first thing I did was join the club and got my license, my novice license. That's what they called it at the time. That was they still had the code in those days, and so that was five words a minute. And then almost immediately, I got my general license, and I was really, I got into ham radio and electronics and built this and built that. I built my first transmitter, which really did work. I made all kinds of contacts. This Overbrook is in Philadelphia, so, you know, that's sort of in a place where you can easily work people in Pennsylvania, Delaware, New Jersey, Maryland, New York. And I was doing CW, or continuous wave, or code.
That's Morse code.
That's Morse code. And that is still my preferred media. And at any rate, when I left Overbrook and went to college, I got my advanced class license. And then I got into computers and in the to HP. And I sort of, the ham license thing sort of languished. And I let my license lapse, which is just, you know, that's almost like creating a sin, doing a sin or something like that. I let it lapse. But just recently I decided I'm going to do it again. So I got on Handy Hams and listened to all their lectures. They have excellent audio series of audio lectures. And then took the exam at the Saratoga Fire Department. And so now I'm Kilo Julie 6 Charlie Bravo's whiskey. And
That's his ham radio call sign. It's KJ6CBW, and he just said it phonetically as Kilo Juliet 6 Charlie Bravo Whiskey. No, that's great. And you know, the licensing, even though the license comes from the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, they don't give license exams anymore. They're all given by volunteer ham radio organizations. And so, as Mike was saying, at the Saratoga Fire Station, there's an organization that gives the ham radio exams twice a month on Saturday mornings. And so if a person doesn't go to, you know, the Handy Ham camp, there are plenty of opportunities to take the exam locally.
And what I do now, I was determined to get back on shortwave, because that was always had always been my favorite, and Morse code had always been my favorite. So I got together with a friend, and we snuck up an antenna that nobody can hardly see. And the darn thing works. Yeah. So
it really does work. I've been over at Mike's and made a few Morse code contacts myself using Mike's equipment, and his antenna really does work. Mike, what's the farthest contact that you've made with your new station?
Well, I'm 40 meters is my preferred, and I made contacts in West Virginia, Maryland. Yeah, this is in the evening, like about 10 o'clock Pacific time. There'll be 1 o'clock their time. But I did talk to a station that was near, it was someplace in North Carolina, south of where Hurricane Sandy was going to come ashore. And he was saying, oh, we can feel the weather, but it's not so bad. Yeah.
It turned out that in many parts of the country, it was pretty bad.
It was very bad.
Yeah. Well, at this point, let me cover the cost issue, and then we're going to try to make an actual contact on ham radio so that you can hear what it sounds like. And I'm using a handheld radio that can be purchased for about $50. It's made by a Chinese company called Bofeng. That's B-A-O-F-E-N-G. And this radio actually has some speech in it. It has some speech feedback. Unfortunately, not everything talks, but it does allow us to have some access to the menus that we wouldn't otherwise have, for those of us who are not able to see the visual display. So when I turn the radio on...
Frequency mode.
It said frequency mode. And it happens to be on the frequency that I want to use right now, which is a local repeater station. What we're going to do is we're going to use an internet connection called Echolink, and we're going to connect to a friend of ours in Minnesota. His name is Matt Arthur. He's a blind ham. He's part of the Handy Hams organization, and we're going to see if we can make a contact with him. So Mike actually has his radio patched into the PA system here so that you're going to be able to hear everything that we do. So the first thing I'm going to do is identify myself with my amateur radio call sign, which is NU6P. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually enter, I'm going to push some buttons on the radio that send standard touch tone sequences to connect us to Minnesota, and we'll see how this works. So, Mike, if you want to turn up the volume on the radio, we'll see if we can make this contact.
I think it's ready to go.
Go for it. Go.
Hey, Mike, turn off your microphone.
Excuse me?
Okay. Turn off your microphone.
And we need the radio on, the ham radio on.
Yeah, turn the radio on.
Turn it off?
On. I don't think it's on.
Down, please. Turn it down. Turn it down. There we go. Okay. NU6P is doing a ham radio demonstration here. We're going to use Echo Link for a minute.
Connecting to Echo Link KA0PQW repeater.
KA0PQW, this is NU6P in Mountain View, California calling.
Yeah, hi John, NU6P, KA0PQW, how you doing?
Hi Matt, I'm doing just fine, thanks, and we have a room of about, three dozen people here right now. We're just giving a demonstration of ham radio. We're here in Mountain View, California, just a little north of San Jose today, where we're having a nice day, and it's supposed to get up into the, mid to high 60s today, I would say. So how's your weather there in Minnesota? Go ahead.
Nothing like that. sure. I don't think it's doing anything. In fact, the sun is out here, but it's probably in the 30s here. Not too bad of a day, though, for Minnesota, that's for sure. Just stepped out the back here. And the sun's definitely getting a little bit more power, and we still got quite a bit of snow on the ground, so a little ways to go for spring yet, I guess. And we'll say hi to everybody in the room there. KA0PQW from Ellendale, Minnesota, about 100 miles south of Minneapolis.
Okay, very good. Well, everybody here says hello back to you, and yeah, it sounds like you're still experiencing some winter weather, that's for sure. Well, Rob Turner is here with me, KB6DA, and Mike, KJ6CBW. We have another ham in the room also, Don, K6SWM, who's here. And we've been talking about ham radio for the last 45 minutes or so to this group, just explaining what it's all about and telling people how they can get involved and what all the benefits are and everything. We are just about out of time here right now for our program segment of the meeting, so I'm not going to stay on with you too long, but thanks for the demonstration, and I will look forward to talking to you maybe a little bit later on this weekend. KA0PQW, this is NU6P. I'll be clear and turn it back to you.
Okay, John, real good. And a nice signal on the KJ6VU machine there from Mountain Grove. Sound real good there. And, well, good on the demonstration and everything, and hope everybody enjoyed it. And, yeah, I've been a ham for about 30 years. It sure is a lot of fun, that's for sure. Made a lot of nice, good friends that way. So, 73, good afternoon to everybody there. NU6P, KA0PQW is clear but listening. Good afternoon.
Yep. Okay. Well, one person just said afternoon. Yeah, he's 2 hours ahead of us because he's in Minnesota. Hey, Matt, we have one question from a person in the audience here. They want to know what kind of birds you have in Minnesota. What kind of birds are prevalent there? Go ahead.
Oh, there's lots and lots of different birds. I couldn't begin to name them all, but in the spring we'll have the robins here. I don't know if anybody's seen those, but we have blackbirds here, and mourning doves here, and blue jays, and hummingbirds probably here, and I don't know, all kinds of different birds here. Pheasants, wild turkeys even sometimes, all sorts of stuff, ducks. So, yeah, there's all sorts of different birds.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. I think that that answers the question. I'm gonna go ahead and disconnect here, and we're going to wrap up our program segment. But, Matt, thank you again, and I'll talk to you later on in the weekend. KA0PQW, this is NU6P, disconnecting.
KA0PQW, repeater, disconnected.
We're sorry about the radio signal that you heard on the PA system. It's a little bit, Mike, you can turn me up a bit, please.
Yeah.
We're sorry about that the signal was a little weak. It just happens to be the way we were able to patch into the PA system. Anyway, I think we're at about the end of our time here. For anybody who would like to see one of these radios, rather than passing it around, maybe it would be better if you just come up to the front table here during the break if you'd like to get your hands on one. We have a couple of different radios here that you can check out. And so, yes, Roger.
Is it on?
Okay.
Hi.
No, we're not going to take questions.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Well, one only.
I see. Not to have a mic here.
You have a microphone. Go ahead.
First of all, I wanted to say to you that I'm sorry I wasn't here to introduce you. I got a telephone call and had to go outside. And I was disappointed because I was going to introduce you and then say, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
That's right. Thank you.
But
I also had
a novice when I was 12 years old, and we had a station in the dorm at the Idaho School for the Deaf and Blind. And then in high school, I was in a ham club. But I'm another one that let my license lapse because I never had money for equipment or family support or whatever, but I'm still kind of there. I was W7WZG.
That's a mouthful.
W7 days.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Roger. And if people have questions, you know, feel free to come up and ask us or contact us. You know, give us a call directly. I don't mean to rush here, but I'm getting the master here is telling me that we're out of time. So, Rob, over to you.
Yeah, it's 11 o'clock, Mike. You can turn me up a little bit. So we're going to take ten to definitely want to be back by 11:15. And like John said, if anybody has questions, just call or just ask. You know, we're always happy to introduce amateur radio and encourage. As you can see, it's a heck of a lot of fun. You can tell when people talk about it, they've had a lot of fun with it. So, Michelle. So anyway, Michelle. Is candy, and we're going to have an auction. We don't need to go over the auction items at this moment,
but people can come see what they look like.
But come and see what they look like.
And I have meltaways and sweepstakes tickets.
Meltaways and sweepstakes tickets. Okay, so let's take a break and come back by 11:15. Thank you.